Hey y'all, how's it going?
Oh, too loud.
Hey y'all, how's it going? I'm Scott Horton. This is my show, The Scott Horton Show. All right, now let me log into the dang chat room. I try to keep the chat room where I can see it during the show. I can't always. But, you know, the chat room. Dudes like hanging out in there and saying things back and forth. Yeah. Just go to scotthorton.org/chat. You don't need any kind of external plugins or add-ons or apps or whatever the hell. Just use your plain old browser window and go to scotthorton.org/chat. Make up a fake name and you're in. Hooray. Yeah, that's pretty cool. All right. Today on the show, I don't know, maybe a guest or two, because I sent out some invites, but I ain't heard back from nobody. I guess it's Friday and people want to take off early if they can. Guess it's already take off early time on the East Coast. I don't know. Anyway, I don't care. I'll sit here and complain for 2 hours. You don't care. You like listening to me complain for 2 hours, don't you? All right, good. Yeah, we're going to complain about some stuff today on the show. And then if we're lucky, also guests. Some guests. Mm-hmm. All right. So, yeah, I don't know. No particular order. How about in this particular order? How about the least important thing first? Did you see we're on Twitter? There's some giant campaign against Stephen Colbert because Stephen Colbert's character tweeted an insensitive thing. Really? And you know what's great is it wasn't even him. Stephen Colbert's Twitter is Stephen at Home, and this other Twitter was just the Colbert Report, which somebody had put together like a fan tweet. I think maybe they were paraphrasing from a earlier bit on his show or something. I don't know. Anyway, it wasn't even really him that tweeted the tweet. And then, it ain't like he just called somebody the N-word or something. It was a joke about Ching Chong Oriental something. But like, seriously, boo-hoo, dude. I don't even think a young child of Asian heritage would cry actual boo-hoo tears over this, right? Only like an ideological liberal adult could work themselves so up to be so offended about such nonsense. And they're saying, fire Colbert. Well, wait, fire his right-wing, know-nothing Bill O'Reilly parody character that he plays on his show? Or you're saying shut down the show? Because someone who is impersonating his character, impersonating a right-winger, said something that hurt your little feelings? Is that really what it takes to get people outraged? How come nobody ever gets outraged about what other people do to other people, but only what they say about them? Sticks and stones are nothing. Only words can hurt me. Boo-hoo-hoo, dude. And I don't know. Yeah, okay, fine. So I'm a heterosexual married white male, and everything's going my way. Except that I'm at the very lowest rung of the economic system and whatever, so at least I got that going for me. I'm not quite really part of the majority. But still, you know what? I put myself in the shoes of any member of any so-called minority group I've ever known, and I don't know any of them who would actually boo-hoo about something that Stephen Colbert's character didn't even actually say. I mean, come on. Meanwhile, Barack Obama just threw a cluster bomb at a little kid and tore his little bitty life to shreds. And nobody cares at all, right? I guess some people do. Those who are hell-bent on it. But for America, you know, Twitter at large, hashtag land out there, meh. You know, occasionally they'll be like, oh, yeah, Obama tore a kid apart with a cluster bomb, but, you know, whatever. Anyway. Wonder if Obama, what if his skin was a little bit whiter And somehow they caught him on tape calling a Yemeni a sand N-word. And saying, yeah, it's fun to kill them because they're just sand N-words or something. Would that then be objectionable? If he said a hurt your feelings thing at the same time that he killed somebody, would you cry about it then? Would you create a hashtag war then? Cancel Obama. He hurt my feelings while he was killing that kid with a cluster bomb. Liberals, they're funny. The things that they think and the emotions that they have, they're funny things. I don't know. And you know what? Look, the worst slur anybody has against me is cracker, right? It doesn't really hurt my feelings. So I don't really know what it's like, you know? I don't really understand what it's really like for someone to say ching chong, ching chong, if you're of Asian extraction. Maybe that is just really, really ruins the entire rest of your day. But grow up. In fact, even if you're a four-year-old listening to the show right now, grow up, kid. People are going to say ching chong at you, and it's not really a big deal. Just tell them you're stupid. I don't care what you say. And then you'll be fine. This is the top story on Twitter today, man. It's still the only one above its rank on Twitter right now is a promoted Noah movie tweet that they paid for. Cancel Colbert is still running on. We gotta get rid of Stephen Colbert because apparently for the first time, his parody, his satire of what a right winger thinks said something offensive. God, I'm about to cry my eyes out right now. Not over what he said, but over the shape of American society. I think America's on the wrong track. Yeah? You think maybe your priorities are the ones that are all screwed up? Is it possible? It's sort of like everybody hates Congress but loves their congressman. That kind of thing, right? Things are this way because you want it this way. Like George Carlin said, hey, did it ever occur to you that our corrupt institutions, our lying politicians, and all of this horrible stuff, that this is the best we can do? That this is what free elections provide? These people all came from American neighborhoods, American schools, American churches, American families, American society. And yeah, of course, the table is tilted and the game is rigged and everything, but so where are all the heroes to stop them? And you know me, I worship Ron Paul. I look at Ron Paul as standing alone versus everyone else, and he's got his flaws and I overlook him because he's so far superior to any legislator probably in the history of mankind as far as what good he did and all the things that he opposed at the right times and whatever. Again, not flawless, but so far above and beyond the rest of them that he just proves the rule that the rest of them are absolutely horrible. You know, people laugh about Nancy Pelosi saying, well, that's why we have to pass the 15,000-page laws so that we can find out what's in it. But that isn't funny, you know? Ask my wallet. It'll tell you. It ain't funny. What? That much? That's all I got? Oh, man. Yeah, no, all of the rest of them are horrible, absolutely horrible. And Ron Paul's the exception that proves that rule to me. I don't see any rationalization or justification for him at this point. But anyway, I don't even know how I got there from Stephen Colbert. Anyway, everybody's stupid boohoo feelings. That's what I was complaining about. Forget your stupid boohoo feelings. Don't you know there's a war on? And don't you know there shouldn't be? Where's everybody's priorities, you know? Oh, that's what it was. That's what I was complaining about. Where the hell are your priorities? They're all screwed up. That's why we're at war all the time, is because people suck. There's no point in having any hope because it ain't gonna get any better. I love George Carlin, man. I wish I could, finish the quote. I'm terribly misquoting it, but you all know the one that it ends F Hope. I hate to say it that way. He would be probably sad to hear me censor it like that, but yep, that's who we are. We cry all day about Stephen Colbert's character cries saying Ching Chong. While everything most important for protecting unravels all around us. Alright. Well, as long as it makes you feel important for a minute. Hey, I'm Scott Horton here for The Future of Freedom, the monthly journal of the Future Freedom Foundation at fff.org/subscribe. Since 1989, FFF has been pushing an uncompromising moral and economic case for peace, individual liberty, and free markets. Sign up now for The Future Freedom, featuring founder and president Jacob Hornberger, as well as Sheldon Richmond, James Bovard, Anthony Gregory, Wendy McElroy, and many more. It's just $25 a year for the print edition, $15 per year to read it online. That's fff.org/subscribe, and tell them Scott sent you. Hey, I'm Scott Horton here to tell you about this great new project, Listen and Think Audio at listenandthink.com. They've got two new audiobooks read by the deepest voice in libertarianism, the great historian Jeff Riggenbach. Our Last Hope, Rediscovering the Lost Path to Liberty by Michael Meharry of the 10th Amendment Center is available now. And Beyond Democracy, co-authored by Frank Karsten of the Mises Institute Netherlands and journalist Carl Beckman, will be released this month. And they're only just getting started. So check out listenandthink.com. You may be able to get your first audiobook absolutely free. That's Listen and Think Audio at listenandthink.com. All right, you guys, welcome back to the show. So here's the thing that's important. Charles Schumer, Democrat from hell, I mean, New York. I remember on the day that he was elected to the Senate, I never did get around to it, but I should have. I wanted to call New York talk radio stations and say, oh, thanks a lot. Like, this guy wasn't bad enough in the House of Representatives. Leader of the Waco cover-up during those hearings and all of that. Now you guys are going to make him a senator? Appreciate it. I mean, hell, Al D'Amato was the devil, but sorry with all the Satan references. I'm not that imaginative with my metaphors and whatever. Al D'Amato was a piece of crap. But Charles Schumer, man. Charles Schumer, I disapprove of his legislative history. And now him and Dianne Feinstein, they're pushing this freedom of the press thing. Oh, yeah, we're here to protect the rights of people like James Risen, who's being forced by the court. They're attempting to coerce him into testifying against a man that they accuse of leaking to him. The story of Operation Merlin, where the CIA gave ready-made nuclear bomb blueprints to the Iranians because they're stupid. As we talked about in the... I think the last interview with Gareth Porter. Maybe the one before that. Anyway. Didn't we? Anyway. So this is the Shield Law. This law is going to say that James Risen shouldn't have to go to prison for refusing to tell the judge, refusing to testify in court, who his source is. And so, wow, doesn't that sound nice? What a great American freedom of the press law, except that who counts as a journalist? Oh, well, all of a sudden now you get into nothing from the history of American jurisprudence whatsoever, I don't think. We skip straight to, well, what does Dianne Feinstein think a journalist is? Well, Dianne Feinstein, to her credit, would recognize James Risen as an actual journalist. But what exactly makes him that? Is it his talent? Is it his sourcing that's so important that he can't testify to it? Because he's got such awesome sources, he can't say who they are? On such gigantic stories like the Americans giving the Iranians ready-made nuclear bomb blueprints? Ahem. And, of course, Bush's and an illegal NSA spying program. That's not what he's being made to testify about. I just had to bring that up. That's the kind of journalism he does. No, it's that he works for the New York Times, and it's an institution, and it does professional reporting, and it pays him a salary. These are the things that she cited. So journalism is not, or a journalist is not someone who at any moment may have ever been in the act of doing journalism, right, on TV, or written down, on a tape recorder, or they were just saving it up in their head, but they swear that they were going to talk about it to a bunch of people later. Nope, now it's something that they want to codify, and they want to exclude people from. Where, and I don't know exactly the entire history of the law all about this, but up until now, I believe the common understanding has been that a journalist is one who does journalism, or is doing journalism right now, or has a reputation of ever doing it before, or anything. If they swear they're working on a story, and they got a plausible story that they're working on a story, then they're a journalist. That's it. Any person who discovered an interesting fact for the very first time and considered sharing it is a journalist. Anyone doing journalism at all is a journalist. That's it. That's what the dictionary would say, right? I didn't pull it up, but yeah, that's it. Simple as that. That's what words mean. But in the name of protecting journalists from having to go to prison for refusing to name their sources, they're really just coming up with a scam to try to write you out of the First Amendment. And now, let me tell you how far and how horrible, how far the Democrats have gone and how horrible they are on this. John Cornyn, senator from Texas, who, you know, if you're going to read his voting record, I hope you have a strong stomach, because it might make you sick how horrible this guy is on everything and always has been. I mean, he's really horrible. I mean, of course, what I care about most is foreign policy, but on any kind of domestic policies and whatever, too, I doubt if you could find a thing to agree with this creep about. He's really bad. He's a Republican. And anyway, here he's criticizing Schumer and Feinstein and saying, whoa, guys, this is basically, you're trying to create a regime of press licensing. That unless somebody gets a permission slip from you first, in effect, they're not a journalist. I'm sorry, that's just not the American way or the law under the First Amendment. And you're out of bounds, and you got to knock it off. And of course, he doesn't have beliefs or anything like that. He's a horrible person, but he has seen, you know, there's a market in the Senate for a right-wing attack on this position, and he's filling it in, right? Like an open lane on the highway. It's not that he really cares about the First Amendment, it's just that he's heard of it before, and he thinks that he can hit them on this, and he's right. They're absolutely horrible. Look what they're trying to get away with. And they're so bad that John Cornyn, who, by definition, you know, starts out bad on everything, has decided, in this case, he'd rather be good so that he can be better than them on it. And outflank them and defeat them politically, or at least score a point politically against them for it. Those are some pretty mean Democrats. To put John Cornyn in a position like that, don't you think? Chuck Schumer. He's just mad he didn't get a chance to burn them Branch Davidians his own self. Sorry, that was only the beginning of my grudge against him, but I'll never forget. Anyway, John Cornyn. What a dog. But yeah, the First Amendment, that's supposed to be the law. And you know, I saw a thing where the guy goes around asking people about the Bill of Rights at college, right? He's not at the beach. In fact, it's that guy, Mark Dice. He's kind of a conspiracy theory guy, but he's all right. And his man on the street stuff is just great. You know, he'll try to sell people a gold coin, a 1 ounce gold coin for $5, and they won't do it, right? Or he asks them, like, who's buried in Grant's tomb? And they can't say Grant. I mean, it's that level of hilarity. But I used to think, okay, you're right, that's funny, and these people are stupid, but come on, you're at the beach in San Diego. That's not the right place to corner somebody about, you know, government and politics and stuff like this, or whatever, the Federal Reserve or whatever. But here he goes to college and he tries to get people to answer about the Bill of Rights, and they don't know anything about it. These college kids, they don't know nothing. And when it comes to the First Amendment, which has five specific protections in it, he's even asking them, come on, First Amendment, you can do it, dude. Give me one. Come on. Like, he's helping them. Come on, man. Think hard now. What's something that you've ever heard about being, come on, that's the First Amendment, right? Come on, you know, you know. And the guy's like, speech? Is that one of them? You know? It's still a question. And still he's not sure. He goes up at the end speech. And that's a real shame, because there's nothing magic about the First Amendment. There's nothing self-enforcing about the First Amendment. And as a law, it's written to be a restriction against the government by the people. But the government are the ones in charge of enforcing that. And so if there's any way to make the First Amendment real, so this is not an actual object, you know, if it means anything, it's because the people insist that that is our way. You can never tell us what church to go to. You can never tell us what church not to go to. Never, never, never. You can never stop us from reporting the truth. You can never stop us from saying what we want, for associating who we want to associate with, to come together and to sue your ass when you violate our rights. That's what the First Amendment says. If we don't all believe that, then it doesn't say that. If we don't all, if that's not the consensus, if that's what makes us Americans, not just that we live between Canada and Mexico, but that there, if there's anything else to it at all, it's that we all nod our head with that. No matter what your religion is, you respect the right of everybody else to believe whatever they want so you can have it your way for you too. Right? Right. Say 300 million people in unison, right? That's what we all believe, right? That people have the right to choose their own faith, don't we? Okay, good. Next. Free speech. Next. Free press. Right to associate with who we wish to associate. The right to hold the government accountable when it violates our highest law, our Bill of Rights. Right? Right. And then next, guns. Next, soldiers in our houses. That was one. He tried to get people to, I forgot, was he, I think he was trying to get people to sign a petition to repeal the Third Amendment. Yeah, that's what it was. He was trying to get people to sign a petition to repeal the Third Amendment so that soldiers can take over our houses. Because after all, they fight for our freedom and everything. And so isn't it fair that they should be able to come in and take over our homes if they want? And people are like, yeah, you're right. And sign the petition to repeal the Third Amendment. That guy's funny, dude. I like that. It just goes to show. And on any given issue, right, it could be the Eighth Amendment, prohibition on torture, or prohibition on making it so expensive to bail yourself out of jail so that you can participate in your own defense that it, you know, becomes impossible. And what the hell? Jury trials? And that's the thing, man. You give up on guns, you give up on free press, you give up on jury trials. What do you got at all anymore, you know? You start to lose it. You let them torture people, then why should they respect the law? You know, you let them torture foreigners, despite the fact that they're banned in two places in the Bill of Rights, in the Fifth and Eighth Amendments, from doing so. Why would you be surprised if they take that same authority you've de facto granted them and use it to violate your rights too? Man, if we can't have a consensus about the Bill of Rights, we're just toast. That's it. It's all we got left of the old law to hold them back from complete totalitarianism. But you gotta agree with it. You gotta wanna know it. Fight for it. Hey, I'm Scott Horton here to tell you about this great new book by Michael Swanson, The War State. In The War State, Swanson examines how Presidents Truman, Eisenhower, and Kennedy both expanded and fought to limit the rise of the new national security state after World War II. If this nation is ever to live up to its creed of liberty and prosperity for everyone, we are going to have to abolish the empire. Know your enemy. Get The War State by Michael Swanson. It's available at your local bookstore or at Amazon.com in Kindle or in paperback. Just click the book in the right margin at ScottHorton.org or TheWarState.com. Don't worry about things you can't control. Isn't that what they always say? But it's about impossible to avoid worrying about what's going on these days. The government has used the war on guns, the war on drugs, and the war on terrorism to tear our Bill of Rights to shreds. But you can fight back. The 10th Amendment Center has proven it, racking up major victories. For example, when the U.S. government claimed authority in the NDAA to have the military kidnap and detain Americans without trial, the nullifiers got a law passed in California, declaring the state's refusal to ever participate in any such thing.
Their latest project is offnow.org, nullifying the National Security Agency. They've already gotten model legislation introduced in California, Arizona, Oklahoma, Missouri, and Kansas, meant to limit the power of the NSA to spy on Americans in those states. We'd be fools to wait around for the U.S. Congress or courts to roll back Big Brother. Our best chance is nullification and interposition on the state level. Go to offnow.org, print out that model legislation, and get to work nullifying the NSA. The hero Edward Snowden has risked everything to give us this chance. Let's take it. Offnow.org.
Yeah, to me it'll always be 1987, really. Like, glory days, man. Yeah, being 11. That was awesome. All right. Welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. This is my show. Hope you like Gangstar. So, John McCain, you guys, you know, Republicans, I don't know. Here's my thing. Well, one, I just think it's funny. But two, also, you know, I like trying to stick up for people, and I want conservatives to have it brought to their attention, you know, if I can be helpful. Just to point out just how much the Republican Party hates your guts. And these Republicans despise their supporters so badly. And you know what? I think I went through a period of this same kind of ranting on this same sort of subject a few years back. Maybe it was back during the election where they were pretending Obama was the problem with him was he was a commie instead of the problem with him is he's a brown shirt. You know? You got your spectrums all screwed up. All that birther crap and all that stupidity. You know? But this kind of thing, well, it's the same thing again. Snowden is a Russian agent. And you can tell the thought process here. All you got to do is sit back and consider it for a second. What's going on here? Well, they don't like Snowden. Snowden's in Russia. And now they've gotten this whole thing about Crimea with Russia and Ukraine. And so, I wonder if we can make the people who believe in us hate Snowden a little bit more by tying him to Putin, who we've been doing such a good job of demonizing over just the last few weeks. And that way we can update our Snowden hate by associating him again with Putin. And they don't care at all whether it's true. They're simply trying to manipulate you. And it would seem to me like, how could that possibly work? How stupid could you possibly be? Isn't it plain to everyone? Doesn't everyone already know that Snowden gave everything he had to Greenwald in Hong Kong last June? That at least he claims he never brought anything with him to Russia at all. He had no reason to. That would have been the dumbest damn thing in the world for him to do. That would have been the most compromising thing he could have done. And it would have been, obviously, completely contrary to what it was that he was up to, which was going to Hong Kong to meet Greenwald. And to turn the stuff over to Greenwald and to Laura Poitras. That's what happened. So here, John McCain, in Time Magazine, John McCain is here saying that, oh, everybody with the classified access to the information knows that Edward Snowden is an agent of Vladimir Putin. And then what's his proof? Like the tiredest of truthers. All he's got is, well, the Snowden revelations tend to come out right at times where certain issues are also going on. Where certain issues have been before us, he says. Yeah, exactly. There's been a steady stream of stories out of the Snowden documents for 9 months straight. And also other stuff has been going on. Oh, did you notice that? Yeah, he's right. It's almost like how they faked the Orange Alert every time they got in trouble in 2002 or 2003, or every time somebody wrote an op-ed in the New York Times about what I didn't find in Africa, a uranium connection to Iraq. They would say, oh no, somebody's going to blow up all the banks in New Jersey. Yeah, John McCain, this is just like that. Except, no, it's not. Go back and look. In fact, go to EFF, NSA, and the primary sources and look at all the news stories that have come out. And then go back and compare that to whatever other breaking stories have happened over the last year or most of a year. And show me any real pattern there whatsoever. Oh, but that John McCain, he just notices. That, did you ever notice that every time I'm mad about something, then another Greenwald story appears? Grr. Yeah, really? What a correlation. It sounds like a real argument for causation there, John McCain. And he was asked, at this point, this is so tired that apparently Time Magazine asked him for evidence. Can you believe that? Time Magazine followed up with John McCain and said, hey, do you have any evidence of the fact? Of your alleged fact that Edward Snowden is working with Vladimir Putin in any way whatsoever? Can you show us anything? He has not responded to their request. Because, of course, it's just not true. But, of course, it doesn't matter that it's not true. That's not really the thing of it. The thing of it is it a useful thing to say to manipulate a right-winger for a minute or a day? And the answer is yes. That'll do just fine. Tell a right-winger, fear, hate, Putin, Russia, enemy, and tell him that like 17 times. And then tell him, Snowden, Putin, Russia. And see if you can't get his knee to jerk. But I have a point. My point is, so how come the knee doesn't jerk the other way, where all the conservatives decide that they hate the Republicans more than anyone in the whole world? Because the Republicans clearly have even more contempt for them than the Salon.com liberals do. The Salon.com liberals, boy, they disagree with you about everything, but they don't lie to you about everything all day. They're convinced, anyway, that they can whoop you on the facts. And of course, I'm leaving libertarians out of this argument because mostly it's a left-right fight in this world, in this society. But man, I don't know how any rank-and-file conservative, it's not like it's just once, right? When it's not John McCain, it's Mike Rogers the day before yesterday. When it's not them, it's some other Republican or some other talk radio show host lying his ass off to you about who you want to hate and fear all the time. It seems like you would hate, if not fear, the people who are lying to you all day. The people who are calling you a child and blatantly attempting to manipulate you and your emotions. Like, what are they calling you? A liberal? An emotional liberal? No! You're a sturdy, rational, conservative type. You don't go for these ridiculous lies. Like, the Democrats nominated an Islamic Kenyan for president when they could have nominated Hillary Clinton. That really doesn't make any sense, does it? Right. You know what? He's actually not an Islamic Kenyan. He's a Christian, nominally Christian Hawaiian. And he's horrible for 10,000 reasons, just apparently none of the same ones that you think. I don't know. That's just funny to me. At the bottom line, it's funny to me. Like, it's so easy to imagine what's going on in John McCain's head. Well, I want people who believe things that I say to think this. And so, that's what I'm going to say. As simple as that. He doesn't even stop to consider for a minute whether you might hate him later for lying to you. And anyway, here's the real point. Edward Snowden is a hero. Edward Snowden's allegiance was to the Constitution, which includes, of course, the Fourth Amendment, and to the people of this country, not to the state, not to the U.S. Senate, or the opinion of any U.S. senator.
And you don't see people do what Edward Snowden did when everything is pretty much all right, but they just have a political disagreement. The pressure of government bureaucrats to work within the system and stay within the system is beyond incredible. And especially all the fake assurances about how you're on the inside and you know things that everybody else doesn't get to know and whatever. You don't want to give up that, do you? And then all the threats of prosecution for breaking any confidentiality agreement and whatever. People don't do what Snowden did for light and transient causes. What Snowden did was risk everything. Everything. He's only got one life, and he's a bright kid. You look at his interviews, his video statements, or whatever. He's a smart guy. He's a thoughtful guy. And he knew, and from his very first interview with Greenwald and Poitras, and his further appearances, especially where he's done interviews, where he's, you know, like the interview with the German organization that he did. He thought this stuff through very well. He knew what he was doing, and he knew that he was risking even his life and certainly his ability to, you know, live free in his own country ever again. And he didn't do that to betray America, you dummies. He did that because he was fighting for America on our side to protect the people of this country from our government. The greatest threat to life and liberty here and everywhere else on this planet. That's what he did. And no amount of Republicans stammering that this is some kind of treason, that he must work for China or he must work for Russia, can change that. And I don't know who's buying this crap anymore. And I don't know how much resentment the liars are building up against themselves. I'd like to think a lot. I'd like to think that conservatives absolutely, and I know John McCain ain't a conservative's favorite anyway, but how about just rank and file Republicans? I mean, how do you like these people lying to you all day? Your own party leaders. The things that they say to you to keep you in line on these horrible policies. I hate them for it, and they're not even really lying to me. I mean, they're not even focusing on trying to fool me. They know better than that. But what's the line on Levin and Hannity and Limbaugh on Snowden and Russia these days, anyway? Anybody know? I sure don't listen. Hey y'all, Scott Horton here for CashIntoCoins.com. So you want to buy some Bitcoins? CashIntoCoins.com makes it fast, easy, and safe to get Bitcoins. Just deposit the money into their account at any of the major banks they support, and then just email them a picture of the receipt and your Bitcoin address, and you get your Bitcoins. Almost always the same day it clears. In a tough, competitive new market, CashIntoCoins.com has the advantage. A great system and great customer service to keep you coming back. That's CashIntoCoins.com. Just click the link in the right margin at ScottHorton.org. Hey, y'all, Scott here. First, I want to take a second to thank all the show's listeners, sponsors, and supporters for helping make this show what it is. I literally couldn't do it without you. And now I want to tell you about the newest way to help support the show. Whenever you shop at Amazon.com, stop by ScottHorton.org first and just click the Amazon logo on the right side of the page. That way, the show will get a kickback from Amazon's end of the sale. It won't cost you an extra cent. And it's not just books. Amazon.com sells just about everything in the world, except cars, I think. So whatever you need, they've got it. Just click the Amazon logo on the right side of the page at ScottHorton.org or go to ScottHorton.org/Amazon.
All right, you guys, welcome back to the show here. I'm Scott Horton. So tomorrow I'm going to interview Gareth again. He's back. He was on a book tour doing some speaking and this kind of thing, getting rid of some copies of Manufactured Crisis. I really wish you would buy that book and read it. In fact, if you don't want to read it, buy it and then give it to somebody who will read it, or give it to the library, or give it to your congressman's, the brightest staffer he's got. Do something with it. Manufactured Crisis, The Story of Iran's Nuclear Scare by the great Gareth Porter. It'll be part 8 or 9 or something of my series with him. He's been kind enough to go ahead and agree to let me interview him, an interview basically per chapter, and go ahead and give the book the full treatment in radio form. And we did, again, have to take a couple of days off for his book tour here. But so Sunday's KPFK show, I'll be recording with him tomorrow, and it'll be playing Sunday morning for you there on at 8:30 on KPFK 90.7 FM in LA. That's 8:30 Pacific time.
And so that'll be part whatever the hell, and it'll be all about the Parchin facility and all the accusations about the so-called former Soviet nuclear weapons scientists working with the Iranians and everything. And it's an important topic in its own right. It's just one part of his book, but I think it'll make a standalone interview just fine. And then I guess Monday or the next interview after that will be wrapping it all up with the fake war scare and the Israeli policy and this and that, and bringing us up to date. Well, you know what? It might take two more after that, because I really want to talk with him again, and maybe a better place to end it would be where we are currently on the nuclear deal and what forces we have aligned for it and what against, and maybe how much the Ukraine crisis matters in coming between America and Russia on this and some issues like that. But I've gotten, I think one guy tweeted and said, you know, hey, man, you should combine all these together and it should be one big thing eventually at the end or something. And then another guy said, hey, yeah, that, you know, I'm really digging it too and whatever. So I do hope, especially for people who are subscribers to the podcast feed, that, you know, I hope people are enjoying going through the entire book like this. And I really hope it's helping Gareth with the sales. He deserves the credit. He deserves the money too for bringing this truth to the market. It took real work, and it's flawless. I mean, the parts where he doesn't have a 1,000% complete case, he calls it that and says, "But still, dude, look at the circumstantial case for this, and sure does seem to defy certainly their explanation or any other one I can think of." But there's very few soft spots in it like that. And that's only, you only find an argument like that when it's completely surrounded by tons of huge facts, too. So, anyway, read the damn thing. Manufactured Crisis. And then listen to the show on Sunday morning. I'll have Gareth back on to talk about it then. You know, Ray said yesterday on the show, Ray McGovern, he, I think, is siding with Robert Perry, that they're concerned that maybe, if not outright the annexation of Crimea, at least a severely negative Russian response to the American coup in Kiev could have been what they were really after, more than installing a government in Kiev, or at least at the same time. Doesn't have to be a either or, but in a way, if you boil it down, they really want is enmity between America and Russia before the final Iran nuclear deal is signed. And man, you know what? Speculation. But Robert Kagan's wife is Robert Kagan's wife, and that's part of the speculation, too, if you ask me. And those neocons, man, even if TV changes the subject from Iran, and even if they've got us all thinking, wow, cool, looks like maybe they're going to do this nuclear deal, and we can finally quit arguing about this stupid nuclear program forever, whatever. Over there at the AEI and at, you know, the Washington Institute for Near East Policy and the Foreign Policy Initiative and wherever the neocons roost, they don't ever forget. They're working hard. They want anything but peace with Iran, Russia, really, or anybody else, but especially not with Iran. And the nuclear issue, as I've tried to show on this show for 10 years straight now, is a big fake issue. But it's the big, fake, outstanding issue preventing peace with America and Iran. And so if we can resolve it, then blam, peace breaks out. It's not really a cornucopia, right? It ain't really magic. You don't really know what's going to happen. But man, it's the last big issue outstanding, fake or not. There is no nuclear weapons program. There never was a nuclear weapons program. But so what? Anyway, fine. Now they're going to double extra super verify that they ain't making nukes to the degree that it's satisfactory to the Americans. That's good. Fine. Lift the sanctions. You know, sign an additional protocol, allow some expanded inspections, whatever everybody's got to do to put this issue to bed. And then, you know, we're going to be frenemies, right? Iran is not going to be a satellite state of America's again anytime soon.
But we can get along with them. We can have a relationship like we have with China. Like we've had with China since before I was born. You know, there's still a one-party communist party tyranny. No one questions that. But Richard Nixon went over there, him and Kissinger, they shook hands with Mao Zedong. And they said it's still better that we get along, ratchet down the tension, split you off from your alliance with Russia, take advantage of, you know, old differences there. And then we can be trading partners and we can begin to see eye to eye on things and forge a lasting peace. Right? And the thing of it is, a lot of the American establishment agrees with that, I think. I think they're kind of tired of this crap. And I think that Barack Obama, by showing a little bit of leadership, it seemed like, I don't want to go down a list of names in my head that I think I memorized from the different things people are writing about it or whatever, but it seems like, you know, most of the big names who are respected in foreign policy at the top, kind of big names like Kissinger, Brzezinski, and Richard Haass, and Leslie Gelb, and all those kinds of real high-level Council on Foreign Relations guys, and former State Department guys. I know James Baker has said some hawkish stuff, but, you know, I think they're basically, Hillary Clinton's probably the worst of all of them. The rest of all these people seem to basically be saying that, like, yeah, let's go ahead and at least try it and really go for this, and not in a fake way, but really, let's do it. Now, Obama's the president, and he seems to really want to do it. He's made it safe for the rest of them to come out for it, you know? And, you know, not that it's not too late for him to sabotage it himself or people on his team, too. Like another thing we talked about with Gareth on the show before I got the book read, but just from his previous journalism, was about how now they're bringing up the alleged studies documents. Well, we talked about this in the, when it came up in the interview, too, I think. But they brought up the alleged studies documents, and now they're bringing up... Well, I see they're bringing up some missile stuff, and I'm not sure. That could be based on the alleged studies documents, or that could be some other set of questions. But basically, they're bringing up red herrings. We already know the alleged studies documents aren't genuine, or at least there's certainly no reason to believe in them. Even the highest levels of the IAEA have admitted so. And yet, they're saying, well, you have to account for all of this. What? Oh, yeah, and by the way, we want to know everything about all your missile facilities and stuff. Well, come on, man. We're trying to resolve the deal over the uranium and the additional protocol and the future of the Iraq situation. That's ARAK, the Iraq reactor, heavy water plant thing, and this and that, whatever. Man, why you gotta bring up all this extraneous stuff except to sabotage? Now you're bringing up extra stuff? When the Iranians have been going along with their end of the deal this whole time since November, there's been nothing but positive reports about out of the IAEA about the implementation of the deal. They've been doing everything that they said they would do, restricting that and ceasing expansion of this and whatever the hell. It's all in there. Expanding access to whatever other, you know, things that they agreed to and all the little details. It's going fine. And I don't know. I'm not sure if Robert Perry and Ray are right. And I think they both, well, at least Ray certainly, I think, was admitting that it was just speculation, but it sort of kind of looked like that and that kind of thing. And it could be, again, you know, part of it, but not the whole thing. The truth is, too, that the neocons hate Russia, too. They always have. Well, and, you know, under the Soviet Union, it was a very anti-Semitic regime, and they had a real problem with that for very good reason. But so when it was detente in the 1970s, the neocons were still hawks big time. That was probably only one of the reasons that they were. They're also just hardcore militarists all around, and there ain't no enemy like the Russians. They're also representatives of arms manufacturers, and there ain't no enemy like the Russians. So, you know, it's hard to ascribe beliefs to the neocons, really, other than, you know, pro-settlement expansion or something. Anyway... yeah. Count the reasons they have to pick a fight with Russia, and the fact that they would even consider bringing Ukraine into NATO ought to show like who are the loose cannons in this situation.
Man, you need some new stickers for the back of your truck. Scott Horton here for LibertyStickers.com. Aren't you sick and tired of everyone else being wrong about everything all the time? Well, now you can tell them all what's right with some stickers from LibertyStickers.com. At LibertyStickers.com, they're against everything, so you know they're good on your issue, too. Whether it's the wars, police state, gun laws, the left and right, or the president, LibertyStickers.com has hundreds of choices so you can find just the right words to express your opposition and contempt for those who would violate your rights. That's LibertyStickers.com. Everyone else's stickers suck.
All right, y'all. Welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. This is my show. This is Scott Horton's show. ScottHorton.org is the website. That's where I keep all the interview archives and all the rest of the whole show archives and the blog that I mean to blog on all the time. I just don't. If I want to. I know I mean to. I should. I quit Facebook. Cold turkey like cigarettes. Just done with you. Done. Actually, once the WordPress stuff gets all updated correct, then I'll be able to probably just push my posts out to Facebook automatically or something. But I ain't never going there again. Never. I'm over it. But so, that should mean that maybe I have a little bit more incentive to blog some stuff. Then Twitter's even more instantaneous gratification kind of a thing than writing a Facebook post. You used to actually write at least half essays, you know? Whatever happened to that? Anyway, my stress blog is there, for what it's worth. There at scotthorton.org/stress, and you can join up the chat room and hang out. Doesn't look like anybody's saying a dang thing in there today, but... Hey, everybody, how the hell are you? If you're listening at all, they just tune in to see if maybe there'd be some interviews. They already heard what I got to say a million times before, but... Anyway... Hey, guys, there's going to be an interview. No, not really. I was just trying to trick you into paying attention. All right, good. So Obama's in Saudi Arabia, I guess, trying to reassure him about the possible end of the Cold War with Iran. And to coordinate what they're doing in Syria. Man, what are they doing in Syria? Back in the Mujahideen? Back in Al-Qaeda in Iraq? That's probably not good. And, you know, I don't support backing the secular fascist dictators of the region either, but, man, can't you just let horrible enough alone without picking evils to make more powerful than they otherwise would be? Such a mess over there, man. And, you know, Syria has been, you know, it doesn't get nearly the attention, and probably that's for the good. We'd have been more involved, you know, outright militarily by now. In a way, it's ironically, you know, for their own good that the Americans don't know that much about it. If our guys were in the middle of it, we would know about it. But it's almost, at least, Iraq war level violence over there. I mean, I don't know how that could really be true. That it could be really as bad as the Iraq war. But then again, I mean, they're saying millions of refugees. Or more than a million anyway, something like that. And more than 100,000 killed. And so for not having a foreign invasion, just having, you know, a civil war, a Mujahideen war against a government in a country where they already lived and that has this, you know, powerful police state and all of that. It's a hell of a lot of people killed. You know, Assad's father had this reputation. In fact, Eric Margolies was there, right? He's told the story. He was down the road when Assad Sr., what's his first name? I'm sorry, I forget. Bashar al-Assad's father sent the military in there, and they killed, what, 10 or 20,000 Muslim Brotherhood. And that was like in 1982, something like that. Well, they challenged his authority, and he is the head of state, so he killed them all. And yet, man, this has turned into way more of a disaster than that. At least that was decisive for what that's worth. This is just a damn mess. And you got America, Turkey, Syria, America, Turkey, Saudi, Qatar, and Jordan, and Israel to some degree or another, at least in the policy idea, and here's what I'd like you to do kind of sense, all in on this thing. In fact, I mean, they're saying now that... Yeah, there's this leak of the Turks talking about, you know, going ahead and invading Syria. And they've got to be absolutely out of their minds. Jason Ditz at news.antiwar.com. A leaked audio recording of a high-profile meeting of top Turkish officials has emerged today, with the officials discussing using their sovereignty over an Ottoman tomb as a pretext for a military invasion of northern Syria. Officials did not dispute the authenticity of the audio, but rather railed against YouTube for its publication of the leak, against the opposition Gulen movement, which they... and against the opposition Gulen movement, which they accused of posting it. By Friday, officials had banned YouTube outright. Foreign Minister Ahmet Davutoğlu insisted the publication of the leak amounted to a declaration of war against Turkey, going on to vow heavy punishment against those involved. The tomb. Yeah, boy, a leak is a declaration of war, huh? Boy, are you going to get it, Mr. Leaker, if these guys get their hands on you. The tomb of Suleiman Shah is in the middle of northern Syria, but is considered Turkish territory under the 1921 Treaty of Ankara. The territory is now under the control of Al-Qaeda in Iraq and Syria, which is demanding Turkey withdraw its troops from the tomb. The audio leak involved officials discussing invading Al-Qaeda soil, arguing they could spin it as defensive. Well, yeah, that's one of the big deals, the fight over the shrines up there, where Shia and Sunni from all over the region are coming to protect holy sites from the other side and whatever. What a mess, man. What a damn mess. And, you know, I hate to say it this way. Well, you know what? I don't have to say it in a way that I hate. I think that one way or another, this would have been resolved by now, and probably for the better, if the foreign powers had stayed out. And you could say, yeah, but it's all Saudi Mujahideen. They didn't send the American Mujahideen, you know, the 3rd Infantry Division. They sent Saudis and this and that. But you know what? America's the world empire, and certainly the empire over the Sunni kingdoms of Arabia. And if Barack Obama had told the Saudis, no, we're not going to help the Al-Qaeda in Iraq guys and send them back up and shock troops to come and create a whole new 1980s Afghanistan, 2000s Iraq-style jihad war in Syria, hell no, then it would have been hell no. If he had forbid it, the Saudis would have had to stop. And so you could say that they've done the lion's share of the work, but that's just outsourcing. That's just plausible deniability. Barack Obama is the emperor. He's the only real trillionaire in the world. He's the real leader of the world empire when it comes down to it. And what he did was he ordered the CIA to help coordinate the Saudis and the Qataris and the Turks to forge this revolution. And what have they done except spill a bunch of blood? And I think probably, this is what I hate to say, Assad probably would have won. But rather than just completely annihilating those he defeated, I think there could have been, if the whole thing had ended earlier on, there could have been a lot more incentive to negotiate some kind of power sharing, some kind of compromise, if not him renouncing his throne. Whatever. Things could have been better for those people if the Americans had stayed out. Notice, I'm not talking about how America should have done better. I'm saying, yeah, just like always, just like with anything, if the U.S. government would back off, like 99 times out of 100, maybe 999 times out of 1,000, everything would be better. If they would just leave it alone. Even when they so-called mean well, if there's even such a thing as that in Washington, D.C. at all. All they can do is make matters worse. They're horrible. You know, look at the thing in Libya. The war in Libya, that's going to go down in history, assuming any honest historians are, you know, permitted to scrawl things out on their Kindles or whatever in the future. They're going to look back at Libya as just as significant as Iraq and Afghanistan and Syria and this giant war that's been waged in Syria. The American overthrow of Gaddafi, not that they should have been backing Gaddafi again, but the American overthrow of Gaddafi has led to complete chaos. And it's led to, well, here's a headline. you'll like or regret. Postbulletin.com. It's just an Associated Press piece. Libya's guns, free-for-all, fuels, regions, turmoil. What the hell kind of headline is that? And the point is that Libya is awash, as they put it, in military weapons. And they're being used not for, you know, home defense and in case of someday. They're being used. These militias are fighting. And it's just like Iraq, you know? You overthrow the government, but then do you have enough soldiers to protect all the arms depots? Or you just leave those wide open for whoever breaks in first? And all this stuff is being used all over the region. In fact, there's plenty of reason to believe that that was what the dead ambassador was doing in Benghazi, was helping funnel these weapons to the Mujahideen, and as well as Mujahideen, to the war in Syria. And that was just, taking the side of the little guy against Gaddafi, mostly for PR purposes, but that's as close as you can get. That, they called it the right to protect, the responsibility to protect.
So you're a libertarian, and you don't believe the propaganda about government awesomeness you were subjected to in fourth grade. You want real history and economics. Well, learn in your car from professors you can trust with Tom Woods's Liberty Classroom. And if you join through the Liberty Classroom link at scotthorton.org, we'll make a donation to support the Scott Horton Show. Liberty Classroom, the history and economics they didn't teach you.
All right, you guys, welcome back to the show now. I'm Scott Horton. Hey to you too. So, you know, every once in a while I got to talk about Rand Paul. I don't know. Great disappointment up there in D.C. What can I say? Here's my thing about Rand Paul. He does things like he comes out and he says real hawkish stuff about Ukraine. Boy, if I was the president, not like he's running for office or anything, not like he's ever in the habit of getting ahead of himself or anything like that, but just, you know, hypothetically, if it was me, I wouldn't let Putin get away with it. But then his argument is, we ought to just back off and do nothing about it. And there's a couple of sort of hawkish things. You know, he says, we ought to get the Europeans to pay to put the missile defense system back in Poland, the one that Obama called off. Well, that's horrible. What are you talking about? But then again, he sort of doesn't really mean it, right? If he's saying the Europeans should have to pay for it, it's a fake kind of, you know, faint anyway. And the point being, he's always trying to split the difference between everything, right? He's always trying to not be a purist while sort of kind of being good on most stuff or something. But here's my thing. I think that instead of being everything to everyone, he's going to just end up being nothing to nobody. And the conservatives and the Republican Party establishment certainly will always have way too much against him. And then the people like me can't be made to love him. The libertarians out here are just shaking our heads. You look at the laundry list of stuff that this guy has gotten wrong, and it's pretty big stuff. I mean, he just wrote a thing the other day condemning the reduction of production of Tomahawk missiles. Don't cut Tomahawk missiles. That's something that we need to keep doing. I mean, I don't know if they make them in Kentucky or what it is. You know, I guess they wouldn't have to be in Kentucky to have contributed to them. I don't know if contributions have anything to it. Maybe he's just friends with a guy who convinced him that Tomahawks are a great way, like drones, to fight war on the cheap without invasions. And so maybe he really believes that's the right thing to do, or I don't know what the explanation is, but I know his dad wouldn't have written a thing like that. Condemning any kind of cut from the Pentagon for something like that, you know? It's, you know, I don't know. And then here's the thing about it, too. I know he wants to be president. And I think that if he was president, it would be a hell of a lot better than if Hillary was president in most ways. On the other hand, I don't think I could count on him to be good on really anything. It's always still hit or miss. It's always calculated according to his own gain rather than calculated as to really what's right. And so, how could anybody believe in him? And the reason that it really makes me upset is because if he just went up there and acted like his father, he would be the greatest senator of all time. Can you imagine a young, eloquent Ron Paul in the Senate with a 6-year term minimum? Can you imagine that? A heroic, brave, uncompromising truth teller who, instead of throwing his old man under the bus every chance he got, instead said, let me tell you something about what my father thinks about this. He's the one who said that you better not do this or that's going to happen. And now look at you, trying to blame it on him. You're the one's got it all messed up. And if he did that, he'd be fighting fire with fire every day, and he'd be great at it. Instead, everything is kind of let's have something argument, this and that. I'll vote for some Iran sanctions, but not other Iran sanctions. I'll support war in Afghanistan, but at the same time, I'll say we need to rethink and debate whether we should be in Afghanistan. And, you know, if you wanted to close Guantanamo, keeping it open isn't my first issue, but I'll be damned if you're going to see me actually try to close it. And, you know, all of this stuff. It just makes me sad to think what could be. What if Rand Paul, you know, everybody got excited. What was his biggest day? His biggest day was on the drone issue. Obama, you must declare that you swear you're never going to use a drone to assassinate a declared enemy combatant, or whatever you call them, in this country. Actually, he didn't say that. He said American citizens. I guess if it was Almari and he was alone at the community college library, maybe that would still be a fair game. But anyway, what people thought they heard was Rand is against federal lethal drones in all cases. And they loved it. And people started tweeting, stand with Rand. And hey, that son of Ron Paul, he's up there and he's saying that there ought to be a law, or he wants a swear from the president that they'll never use drones to murder Americans. So yeah. And even if people didn't realize that that actually could be an issue, and it could, they thought, I'm for that. And so what was his big day? His big day was the day he acted most like his father. The day he got up there and said, hey, listen, power, back off, man. And people rallied to that. That's why people love Ron. And you know what? Ron is bad on, you know, the southern border, and he's bad on a couple of things. And I've heard people complain, although it never bothered me, honestly. But I've heard people complain, like it really bothers them, his voice and the way he kind of stammers and is not so eloquent all the time or whatever. But he always was out there telling the truth. And so I'm not the only one who never minded about it. In fact, if anything, his stammering just makes him more every man. He's really just your country doctor up there trying to do the right thing, man. He really is, right? He's not there, the big square-jawed alpha male trying to make his money and be a powerful guy in the community and wield his authority around and do favors and ask for them and all these things. He really wasn't about that. He really was up there just trying to teach people about the boom and the bust cycle and why they ought to stop bombing people all the time, you know? And people could tell that, like, whatever this guy is, he's not lying to me. Whatever this guy is, he's honest, and actually, I can tell he actually cares. He says things like, listen, I know you want anyone to be able to go to college if they want a higher education and to go far in life. We all want that. But I'm sorry that, in fact, your government program has just driven up the cost of education so high that people must become dependent on the federal government for these massive debts just to go to college, no matter who they are. And it's backfired. It ain't right. And that's the truth. And so I'm sorry if that rubs you the wrong way at first, but if you think about it, you'll know I'm right. And it's true, and he's right, and everybody knows he's right. And even that lady who taunted the pro-Obama lady on MSNBC, who did her letter to Snowden saying he was a coward for not coming home and going to prison for the rest of his life where he could, you know, sit in the Supermax next to Ted Kaczynski. She had to admit, you know, Ron Paul's right about that. I'm an educator at a university. And when the new rules come in saying how much for education aid they're willing to pay. We raise our price to meet that. Simple as that. Of course we charge them the maximum. What are we going to do? Not charge them the maximum? And so there she had to admit, this is a total left-wing, liberal, Obama-loving, central planning lady, and she couldn't, for the life of her, understand the economics of it. But when Ron Paul said that, she's just like, hey, personal experience, you're damn right. That's exactly how it works. And anyway, so this is why people love Ron Paul. People love Ron Paul. I mean, my first opportunity someday when I'm rich and I can afford to waste $50 or whatever, I want to get one of those giant, printouts of a portrait of him or like the photograph kind of thing and frame it and put him over my fireplace like people used to do with FDR back in the old days and whatever like that. That's what he is to me, man. He's great. Ron Paul's a great man. And the reason isn't because he got so many laws repealed. The reason is because he told the truth no matter what about power and why it was wrong and what it was up to. And of course, when we're talking about Rand, the reason for the disappointment is we know that he knows all of these arguments at least as good as his father. He's heard it all. He knows what's right. And so he'll stake out a great opinion on this or that. He's suing over the NSA on the Fourth Amendment grounds. Okay, so there you go. He voted against foreign aid to Ukraine in the middle of all this, you know, tough talk about it. He knows what the right thing is. But if you would just be brave, you know, this is what Obama did. This is how Obama extended the war in Afghanistan. He thought he would look brave if he extended the war. When really, that was cowardice. That was him backing down. He was afraid that they would make him look like he was afraid. And he couldn't have that. He was afraid that it would work. And so he backed down to the generals. He backed down. You know, they made McChrystal resign for personally slandering the vice president, that kind of thing. But McChrystal and Petraeus both made leaks like, yeah, Obama's delaying so long in deciding this decision that he's putting our troops in jeopardy and all this kind of stuff. They were really mad-dogging him in the press, his own generals, forcing him into it. And instead of saying, hell no, I'm the elected president of the United States. You work for me. If you don't like it, you can resign. Go get a Fox News show. I'm not afraid of you, general. He said, okay. You want 60,000 more soldiers to fight another 6 years of this war for nothing that we all know you're going to lose anyway, you boob? Okay, just don't call me a sissy. Please, he said. It's that same kind of thing. Be brave. Whenever you stand up to John McCain on anything, we all like you more. And I mean all, not libertarians. Everybody likes it when you fight with John McCain. You don't have to give in to him. In fact, you ought to deliberately do everything you can to filibuster Iran's sanctions just so you can get in a fight with him over it. You ought to put the most controversial stuff front and center so that you can fight about it, so that you can win. Because guess what? As everybody knows, the bipartisan consensus is horrible and wrong on almost everything. So fight about it and win. And you could be the greatest senator ever, even if they never let you become president. Even if they never let you be a senator again after this. Instead, all this compromise.
Hey, I'm Scott Horton here for WallStreetWindow.com. Mike Swanson is a successful former hedge fund manager who provides his subscribers with a very real window into his investments, updating them on every move he makes in the markets. Right now, Mike's anticipating a bear and is dumping all the stocks while the getting is good, investing instead in gold and the commodities. Protect your assets and learn the wise ways of the markets. WallStreetWindow.com. And check out Mike Swanson's great contribution to the history of the rise of the American Empire and the war state, available at scotthorton.org/Amazon.
All right. Now, the other thing about Rand Paul is that he is still Ron Paul's son. I got in a big old argument with Justin Raimondo about this. You may know if you read Justin at antiwar.com. He was very anti-Rand Paul for a long time there, and then he had a complete about-face. It was the don't drone me, bro. It was that changed him. When Rand Paul did the drone filibuster, he won over Justin. And I got a big argument with Justin Raimondo when I was in Washington, D.C. at that conference on Israel, the National Summit on Reassessing America's So-Called Special Relationship with Israel. And He was saying that, you know, Trotsky said, we can't have a broad popular front because the bourgeoisie are terrible, and so we don't want to ally with them. And Stalin said, hell yeah, we can ally with them, and he won. And I don't know exactly which context he's talking about, but eventually, you know, we all know that Ice Pick Leon died in Mexico, and Stalin got to rule a third of the world for a while. And that was the difference between them, was that Stalin was willing to compromise on who he was willing to ally with in order to win. And, of course, he turned around and killed them all, which, we don't have to follow that example. But Justin's point was that we need a popular front, that this is an emergency. And so it doesn't matter if Rand Paul is a quarter of the man his father is. Who cares about that, dude? He's still going to be better on the Bill of Rights than the rest of them. And he's going to be better on the empire than the rest of them. Even if it's only what you consider marginally still worth supporting. Now, my attitude about that is I can't really argue about all of it except the worth supporting part. Because for me to support him would mean what? I don't know. I'm not going to vote for him. If anything, I think my criticism of him, probably he doesn't ever hear about what I got to say or anything. But if it helps, you know, in the broader libertarian movement that a lot of people are kind of fed up with him for not being libertarian enough. I hate to say it, but maybe that'll help fortify his support on the right, but it ought to help push him to move toward libertarian positions to be better on things, too. For him to recognize that we might worship your old man, but still. It's like Cat Williams said about Hillary Clinton. Yeah, we liked Bill, but lady, we don't even know you. You don't get to come in here and pretend like all black people are going to vote for you. Especially if you're running against a black guy. Dummy. You know, what are you talking about, dude? You don't own our vote, you arrogant, you know, power monger. And I think Rand knows that there are a lot of libertarians who are pretty disaffected, but I think we got to keep that up in order for him to be the best senator and or president he could be, if he even does have a shot at it, which I don't think he really does. That's why I really emphasize what a great senator he could be compared to the mediocre senator, failed presidential candidate that I think he'll end up being. But Justin pointed out that Ron used to be pretty right-wing on some things. And he's gotten better and better over the years, so I wish Rand would hurry the hell up. Rand ought to be starting off where at Ron's best, rather than this giant, you know, statist reset. But as far as supporting his presidential ambitions or whatever, I can't think of a politician I've ever heard of I'd prefer to get the nomination of the presidency. But then, yeah, I'm not really sure. To me, it's sort of a moot thing because I don't really think there should be a presidency at all. I hate even supporting the presidency at all. And I would hate to see Rand Paul get up there and call it libertarianism as he, you know, implements Mitch McConnell foreign policy, for example, or a domestic one on a lot of things, too. That's not libertarianism, conservatism. And how committed is he to anything other than his own ambition? I just don't know. I mean, here's a guy who's been premature ejaculating all over the place about, oh, I would be honored to be Mitt Romney's running mate. Like, dude, Mitt Romney's not going to make you his vice presidential running mate. Be cool. Chill out. And then, really, you'd be honored? You're just dying to step on your own father's head for the slightest chance to get Paul Ryan's losing spot on the Romney ticket? When he couldn't possibly beat Obama in 2012. Don't be so ambitious all the time. That's what everybody hates about Hillary Clinton. That was the parody on Saturday Night Live. Or was it? No, that was in real life. Well, they asked her, why do you want to be president? And she went, because of, there's just so many things that I want to do for you. It's just like, whatever, dude. She didn't even have a canned fake excuse. It's because she wants her hands on the grips of absolute power. That's why she wants to be the president. Because she wants to be the boss of you and everybody else.
And he's almost as bad as her, Rand is, on that. You know, I say, be a great senator for another term or so until people really want you. Until their minds have changed where they really are peaceniks now. They really are much more free market before. Than before. And really have a consensus about more of these most important issues. But now, you know, I'm surprised he didn't run against his dad in the primary back in 2012. I bet he was pissed when Ron announced he was going to run again. And that's the problem with him, man, ultimately, dude, is it's not just that he's made a political calculation that he's going to compromise on some things in order to get more power to do better later, like the secret Obama or whatever. It's there's a real kind of underhanded and sort of mean streak in him, you know? The way he endorsed Romney and all of that, that was just one clue. But, and also, look what he's willing to compromise on. He'll compromise on any kind of foreign policy issue. But, boy, when it comes to extending unemployment benefits or food stamps, all of a sudden, boy, is he a pure doctrinaire libertarian. When he knows, as well as anyone in this society, he knows that it was the federal government that destroyed the economy. That it's not all these people's fault that they're out of work. The government's been waging war against them. Has driven them out of work, needed their wealth to kill Arabs with, and took it. He knows that. He knows the Federal Reserve Bank causes the boom and the bust. But he'll pull the rug right out from under the weakest while he turns around and then writes an op-ed saying, don't cut the Tomahawk missile. See, this isn't just I disagree with your strategy now. This is I think that you're immoral now. I think that you've gone way too far. Just like with the sanctions on Iran. Hey, man, you're preventing trade in medicine that helpless civilians need to live. What are you doing? It doesn't matter if you're going to lose anyway. You vote no on stuff like that. You don't vote yes on depriving dying, weak people of medicine. What are you doing? How could you do that? And what a great fight to get in. Right? You could be a Republican senator and be like, look, damn Obama, okay? This ain't about him. This is about the truth. Let's fight. Sanctions are evil. Iran's not making nukes anyway. Etc. It could have been a whole new drone filibuster. The American people rallying around. Just like Ron. What was it that made people love Ron? It wasn't just that, like I said, he's the truth teller all the time. It was that, you know, he caught their notice, right? He was just, you know, House members don't even run for president. You got to be a senator or a governor to run for president, man. Come on. Here he is. He's a little old member of the House. Nobody except the libertarian community, which is, you know, 1% of every neighborhood around the country, had ever heard of him before. And he got out there and he got in a tangle with Rudy Giuliani, who tried to bully him and try to pretend that, you know, he said America deserved to be attacked on 9/11 or something. And instead of saying, no, 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 I'm very sorry, like everybody expected any politician to do, he said, listen, the truth is we've been bombing Iraq for 12 years over there before 9/11. And that's what helped, you know, cause the attack. The CIA coined the term blowback to describe the phenomenon. They don't hate us for being happy over here. They hate us for being mean to them over there. It's just true. Sorry, Rudy, but it's just true. And as long as we ignore that, then we ignore that at our own peril. It means that we don't make the right decisions of how best to protect ourselves from this kind of level of violence. So that's the truth, everybody. How do you like that? Is my time up? Okay. And the American people at home freaked out, dude. I mean, a lot of them, millions of them, became 1,000% Ron Paul diehard supporters right then. What's this guy's name again? They all screamed to each other and put it on YouTube and passed it around a zillion times.
It's still one of the most viewed YouTubes of him. Ron Paul courageously stands up to Rudy Giuliani, tells the unpopular truth that the state doesn't want discussed, but that the people know in their hearts is right. Doesn't mean anybody deserved the attack. It means Bill Clinton provoked it. It means he's as responsible as those suicide bombers. That's what it means. It doesn't mean that the people in the towers are responsible. It means Bill Clinton is. And George H.W. Bush and all their minions that helped implement their policies in the Middle East leading up to those attacks. That's whose fault it is. Them and the guys who organized the attack and the guys that participated in it. So, that was why people love Ron Paul. Otherwise, what's politics to most Americans? It's a bunch of S being shoveled at you all day by all of these guys, and you put up with, you know, the part of it that you absolutely have to, you think. What's to love about any of these scum, these lawyers who rule us up there? Except when one of them bravely tells the truth about how wrong the rest of them are. So, anyway, I'm sorry, I'm back on my last rant. My rant was supposed to be, I want to support this guy. He's Ron Paul's son. He's got to have some good in him, you know? It's a reverse Star Wars situation. I want to support him. I want him to do better. When he's the only one of two in the Senate who vote against Ukraine sanctions, I retweet it, man. I want to like it. I want to like him. I want to support Justin's Popular Front for the Bill of Rights and Peace as best as we can possibly get. He's right how important that is. Not for libertarianism. This isn't about us. This is about our country, the real world that we live in, and people are suffering at the hands of this state. What's the best we can do is the best we can do, kind of, right? I don't know. I'm not sure if he's the best we can do, man, Rand Paul. On March 7th at the National Press Club in Washington, D.C., the Council for the National Interest is co-hosting the first-ever national summit to reassess the U.S.-Israel special relationship. Confirmed speakers include Walt Scheuer, Giraldi, McGovern, Katowski, Porter, McConnell, Weiss, Raimondo, USS Liberty survivor Ernie Gallo, as well as co-sponsors Alison Ware of If Americans Knew and the great Grant Smith of the Institute for Research Middle East Policy. That's the national summit to reassess the U.S.-Israel special relationship. Friday, March the 7th, all day at the National Press Club in Washington, D.C. NatSummit.org.
All right, y'all, welcome back. I'm Scott Horton. This is the Scott Horton Show. I can't believe it's already Friday again. The older I get, the faster time goes. I guess that's the same with everybody, but it really trips me out, man. Already Friday. Well, that's a good thing. I ain't complaining, you know. I still work 7 days a week anyway, but there's something that seems like it's the beginning of some time off about Fridays, even if it never really is, you know, I don't know. Who takes time off these days? Who can afford to? Alright. So I'm Scott Horton, this is my show, and, well, they're gonna have a vote next week in the Senate Intelligence Committee whether to release the report. Wait, it's been up to the committee to release the report the whole time? Anyway, I guess Dianne Feinstein only wants to release the 500-page summary. Damn it. There's a 6,300-page report. Enough of this. Release the torture report. It's the story of the Bush-Cheney regime's CIA torture program. And don't think for a minute that means the end of the torture program. That just means the CIA's role in it. Because, of course, the military is completely involved in torturing people for years in the Bush-Cheney regime, and in humongous numbers, too. Thousands and thousands and thousands of Iraqis, mostly Afghans, too. At Guantanamo, and of course in their own countries, and people brought to Afghanistan and to Guantanamo from God knows where, and tortured there. But anyway, 6,300 pages on the CIA's torture program. And boy, do they not want to release that thing. It caused this whole scandal, like we talked about with Ray McGovern yesterday on the show. caused this whole giant scandal in spying on Senator Feinstein's staff. And I was glad that, Ray got it completely right off the bat, of course, that Feinstein just took it personal because she's a grandmotherly type in her own way. And these young staffers that did this work, she has personal loyalty to them. And for the CIA to threaten them with prosecution for including the Panetta report that the CIA didn't mean to give them access to, and to try to pretend that they had hacked into CIA computers where they didn't belong and stole it, which is such an obvious lie, but to trump up that charge and turn it over to the Department of Justice like that, she took that as a personal kind of, hey, you're stepping over the line here, and so what have you. And especially at a time when the Inspector General of the CIA, not her, it was the IG of the CIA who recommended to the Department of Justice that they open an investigation into the CIA agents who spied on the staffers. And so it's just so clear that the CIA is in the wrong here in every way. Not that that makes anything good about Feinstein. Even her motives aren't pure, right? Her motives are not really the separation of powers at all. When she got up there and gave her speech and pretended that this is high principle about executive versus legislative branch, and pretended to invoke the Fourth Amendment. And then, of all things, she invoked Executive Order 12,333, which is the executive order that authorizes the CIA wiretapping overseas, but includes a section about how, but you can't do this to Americans. And she cited that. But of course, that's one of the huge legs of the CIA global data collection, is under the authority of 12333. And that's the one, as Marcy Wheeler never stops pointing out, thank God, that Feinstein admits that, oh yeah, I guess we don't do any oversight of them and what they're doing under 12333. We only focus on what they're doing under Patriot Act 215 and FISA Amendments Act 702. Yeah, well, so how huge of a loophole is that? It's huge, as Marcy has shown over and over how much of this, or what it seems is just the beginning of how much of this stuff is under that authority. And then she invoked that, where she admits she is not doing her job of oversight on them. She, that's just like a silly parentheses side note, I guess. She invokes that correctly against their authority, the CIA's authority, to operate on American soil against her staff at all. You don't have the authority to do that. But she didn't mean any of that. It was just personal to her. But she's absolutely right, of course, about the Fourth Amendment and Executive Order 12333 and about the separation of powers, too. She must have had someone else help her with her speech. But the point is, I mean, that's really huge. And I don't know whether they teach the three branches of government in seventh grade anymore at all. I guess I really do owe those teachers I hated so much a tiny debt of gratitude there. That, hey, listen, there's no agency of the executive branch of government that is of any higher rank than a U.S. senator, all right? Especially not the chair of the Senate Intelligence Committee, which was created just to oversee them in their service to the law. For the CIA to stand up against the U.S. Senate like this is huge, is historical, is a real marker of how low we've gone, how far we've come, how down we are. I don't know. Is there a better way to say that? It ain't good, man. And look, Brennan hadn't had to resign. Obama backed him up, and that was it. And Ray said, well, they'll go have a glass of wine, her and Brennan, and he'll privately apologize to her feelings, and that'll be the end of that. And they'll get right back to going ahead and violating the Fourth Amendment and FISA 702, and even the language of the Patriot Act, which they go so far beyond, and the separation of powers of us from them, the Fourth Amendment, and Executive Order 12333, which forbids them from the intelligence agencies from operating on American soil in just this way. She's the lead cover-up senator on that entire project. Isn't that amazing? What a world. And of course, this is, just brings up the whole question of, I wonder how much domestic spying the CIA is doing. We've heard a lot about the NSA because that's where Snowden had access to their documents and this and that. But what's the CIA up to here in America? Do we really know? I'll tell you one thing that Jesse Ventura said that I'd take seriously is when he says that when he was the governor of Minnesota, there was CIA in his state house, and there was no doubt about it. And the way he put it was, in all the state houses, there are CIA moles in all of these governments. And the state governments, they are firmly under the control of the intelligence agencies of the federal government. And I don't know how firm, but boy, I bet you there's a whole giant project like that with some files need leaking right now. Can you imagine those files? CIA infiltration of state legislatures? My gut tells me that he's right about that. Doesn't that sound right to you? And I don't mean David Dewhurst, who everybody knows is CIA, but I mean people who are actually CIA officers on a mission. And maybe that's not even really necessary most of the time, right? You fill your state houses with former CIA guys. It's the same damn difference. When they're, you know, where their loyalties lie, where their priorities fit, you know? Anyway. Oh, just heard from Patrick Coburn. He can't do it. Oh, good. Well, the show's over in 3 minutes, so that's all right. But this is huge, and Brennan is not having to resign. You dig that? CIA caught spying on the Senate Intelligence Committee investigating CIA torture. And then they try to intimidate the Senate by trying to file charges against the Senate staff who found better proof of what they had done in their torture program. And then, when called on it by the chair of the Senate committee, they said, what? CIA director said, yeah? What are you going to do about it? And the Senate said, nothing. Boy, there's something I'll give credit to Rand Paul. I mean, I don't know if I can take him at his word. Honestly, I'm just being honest. I'm not trying to be mean to the guy. I honestly don't know whether he really means this or not. I honestly don't know whether he means this or not. I can't take it for granted that he does. But he at least claimed to perceive real fear in the eyes of his fellow senators when it came to this CIA-NSA stuff. And it was, you know, real fear about what might happen to them. And maybe not for their lives, but for their careers, for whatever secrets they thought they were keeping, but apparently not, etc. They're really afraid. And in other words, if you assume that there's really something to that, the point is that they know that the executive agencies have no cause to respect the law or the limits on their authority at all anymore. You can only torture people to death so much before, if there's no law to stop you from doing that, there's no law to stop you from doing anything. There's no power or raid that can do a thing. What's the Senate going to do? Remove John Brennan from power if Obama won't remove him? They're going to impeach him and remove him and convict him and remove him? Nah. Like Ray said, they're going to go have some wine and get along. They're going to figure this thing out between them. And that'll be the end. But it'll be, you know, one more signpost on the way to hell here, on the way to completely lawless authoritarian tyranny, whatever adjectives you like. Living death Frankenstein slavery. As Francis E. Deck put it. Yeah, they should have had taxi theme music behind Francis E. Deck. That would have worked. By the way, don't go listen to Francis E. Deck. He will say things that hurt your feelings. If you have feelings, seriously, don't go listen to that. That guy's completely crazy. For somebody to take what he says personally at all would be sad. But anyway. Living death slavery, indeed. All right, I'm Scott Horton. Thanks for listening. See y'all Sunday morning or here next week.